Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, and you're listening to another episode of In the Drink, the show that brings you all things beverage-related, beer, wine, booze, and the personalities behind those that bring them to you. Bright and early at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays. Thanks so much for joining. For those of you whose first time it is listening, I'm Joe Campanelli. I'm the beverage director and co-owner of Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, and Four and La Picho restaurants in downtown New York City. And I'm super excited today because here with one of the owners of my absolute favorite new local bar. It's called The Wren. I'm here with Chrissy Harris, who is the owner and bartender at The Wren. And prior to opening The Wren, she was at Gramercy Tavern, which is by all accounts my absolute favorite restaurant. It's definitely the restaurant I've been to the most since I've been able to afford going to nice restaurants with a little bit of regularity, where I understand she learned a lot of her training. But anyway, I'm super excited to have Chrissy here with us at Roberta's on heritageradionetwork.org. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks for having me. This is really exciting, so thank you.
So tell us a little bit about where you got your training with bartending. How did you become such a talented bartender?
I started off by being not so talented bartender. I grew up in California, and I started working in restaurants sometime between my freshman and sophomore year. I played sports through college, and I needed some stuff to do in between and to make some money, so I returned back from San Francisco to Napa Valley and got a restaurant job, as most people do. And I thought it'd be a summer job. It turned into an absolute passion of mine. I started out as a host rezzo, turned maitre d', turned busser, turned barback, turned bartender. I was out there at the CIA restaurant, and I fell in love. So I started out, you know, like I said, front of the house, host rezzo, and then once I got behind a bar, I realized it was so similar to playing sports. It was in an interesting way. It was like being a captain of a team, and everything needed to work together, and it was really exciting and interesting. Being from California, everything was vodka-driven, absolutely vodka-driven. So the first job I actually ever had was, as a bartender proper, was at this martini bar downtown Santa Elena, Napa Valley, and it was it literally was like 300 different vodka martinis that I had to learn. And it was all fresh squeezed juices, and you know, everything was orange, blood orange vodka, and you know, all these things, and it was like mixing and tasting, and I, you know, everything was basically a version of a Cosmo, if you will. And so I did that for, I think it was like 4 years, and I ended up on this coast. And I remember one of my first interviews was actually at Flatiron Lounge. And I sit down with one of the owners, and I'm just so green. I sit down, and I'm like, yeah, you know, my cocktail experiences, I make really good cocktails with fresh ingredients, and I build them and taste them and balance them. And I remember her looking at me kind of like, what? You know, and only in hindsight, after I actually got the job at Gramercy Tavern and worked with Jim Meehan, did I understand really how different cocktails were from California to New York. And I realized that I didn't know anything. And I was like, I can't believe I was in that interview. Like, she must have been looking at me like, where's this girl from? So anyway, to make that little short, that's how I kind of got into bartending. And under Jim at Gramercy Tavern and the wonderful staff at Gramercy Tavern, Juliet Pope, Kevin Mahan, all those guys, I really was able to see products, taste products, learn so much in such a great environment. And that's kind of how I hone my skills.
All right, we'll talk a little bit more about Gramercy Tavern, but I think this is really interesting, this whole vodka in California to New York. I mean, we were talking a little bit before we got started about vodka, and I think you find a lot of good bartenders aren't so excited about vodka. And I know it's not my personal favorite favorite spirit, but you've started to embrace vodka a little bit in your recent years, you're telling me.
Yes, not personally as something that I would order out, but I think that there's a place for vodka in bars, and the place and time that I use it in cocktails would be, for example, if I make a Moscow Mule, which I think is a fantastic cocktail. For those who don't know Moscow Mule, it's lime juice, ginger beer. Traditionally, it was Stoli originally because it's Russian vodka, or any other vodka. And it's delicious. And what you're tasting is there's a lime and the ginger, and the vodka just basically lets those other flavors go. What I like to do is put a little float of Fernet Branc on the top of it. And what that happens is Fernet's extremely bitter and delicious, and a lot of people in the restaurant business just shoot it like it's water. But for most people, it's a really intense flavor. But because the vodka's in that cocktail, you can put a little bit on top, and it spreads out that flavor. And so vodka can be used in cocktails in a very interesting way to actually make a flavor more approachable.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that a lot of your cocktails at the Wren are very farmer's market driven. One of the things that they do like to do with vodka is infuse it, since it is such a plain flavor. Or, you know, we were speaking before about how vodka has to be, the definition is that it is colorless and flavorless. So one of the things that I like to do is get herbs or fruits from the market and infuse it into vodka. And this way you can preserve those fruits and you can give your vodka a little bit more flavor. How do you incorporate the farmer's market and local seasonal ingredients into your cocktails?
A big part is inspiration. Just walking through the Union Square Market and seeing things that are in season. I have a cocktail on right now at the Wren called Strawberry Fields, and that was inspired because I was walking through the market and the strawberries were so fresh and so amazing. And unfortunately, it was a short season this year for strawberries, and I think there's a little resurgence of the season right now, but those strawberries in the market are so good. They need to be in something. So that inspired the beginning of the cocktail. And then I happened to be passing this amazing bunch of herbs and saw basil, and I thought, all right, let's start a cocktail with that. Strawberry, basil. It turned into adding gin and then Strega, and it's this cool herbal, sweet, you know, balanced cocktail. But the inspiration was going through the market and seeing what's actually available.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about how you got in contact with the folks from Wilfie and Nen. So Wilfie and Nell. So you're at Gramercy Tavern, just this bastion of hospitality and good cheer and taking care of people and just high quality all over. And then Wilfie and Nell, I live in the West Village, just a super cool, like incredibly well-run bar that's very popular and hot. And I think maybe a very different crowd from the Gramercy Tavern crowd. How did you get in touch with those folks to team up for the Wren?
I used to go to Bua, which Bua is their first, my partner's first bar. It's actually on St. Mark's between 1st and A. And I had torn my ACL, so I had just come back to work, and I was doing like the day shifts, like lunches. And so myself and my friend Hannah used to get off work around the same time at 4 o'clock, and we'd go to Bua. They had these great windows opened up, and it was sunny, and the bartenders were so nice and amazing, and they just knew who we were like the second time we were there. And so we kept going back, and then they got friendly with us, asked us where we worked, and, you know, next thing you know, they're asking me cocktail advice and things like that. So when they went to open up Wilfie and Nell, they remembered me, called me up, asked me to do their consult for them for their wine, a little bit for their beer and some of their cocktail stuff. And so through that, I also opened up, because I was coming back from the knee surgery, so I was also able to pick up little more shifts for them. So I actually opened Wilfie and Elf for them for the first 6 months as a bartender. And, you know, at the time it was fun and it was different because it wasn't Gramercy Tavern. It was a bar and I could just sling drinks and, you know, I didn't have to do the whole, you know, presentation of food and the wine pairing. It was such a different world. So I guess I made an impression, because when they went to start thinking about their next bar, they called me up and this is where we are.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so what were some of the most valuable things you learned during your time at Gramercy?
Oh, wow.
like where to start.
Yeah, where to start. I mean, God, it's a wonderful restaurant full of wonderful people.
I always talk about it as it's like the Harvard for people in the restaurant industry.
Absolutely.
It's just the best. You leave, you know, you have a certain caliber of if someone has worked at a Danny Meyer restaurant, but especially Gramercy, you know that those are people who are in it for the right reasons, who have a certain level of professionalism. I think it's just the best. So, okay. Sorry. What are some things that you learned while you were there?
I think hospitality is something I think that was already in my blood, but I think really honing it into an art, I learned that extremely well. And also, I mean, the cocktail knowledge and the things I was able to taste, wines that I've never even heard of, regions I'd never heard of, liqueurs and cocktails I'd never heard of, and just really just somebody kind of saying, this is all the here for you to taste and to try, and go for it. We're going to trust you. Like, you take over the cocktail program, you start making the cocktails, and we're going to be here to support you. And it was just, there's the support and the belief that if you are good and you put your mind to it there, they're going to push you into other things. It's a fantastic place. I mean, if anybody out there wants to get into hospitality, you should try to get a job there. It's fantastic.
That's great. Yes, I agree. I wish that before opening up Dell'Anima, I would have spent some time over at Gramercy Tavern. I think it would have been a much smoother opening.
You can still do a stage. You can just call them up. Hey,
I've been doing a stage at table 20. I don't know the table numbers there, yeah. But yeah, going up and sitting, especially in the bar. So it's one of the best dining bars I've ever been to. It feels good. It feels like a bar that's meant for dining. And I think that's part of the reason that at all of our restaurants, we really wanted to make great bar dining. I just love that experience of, it's a different dynamic when you're sitting with a bartender as
Absolutely.
Opposed to a server. It feels a little more personal. It feels like a little bit more like you're being personally taken care of, because you're at their bar, and it's very clear what is their bar, as opposed to a server section, which you don't know what that is. I absolutely love it. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with Chrissy Harris from The Wren, and thanks so much for listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to In the Drink. I'm Joe Campanelli, the host, here with Chrissy Harris of the Great Wren, the Wren Bar down on the Bowery, just really around the corner from our new restaurant, La Picho. But it has kind of become my local hangout. I really love it. I think it's one of the best. Even if it wasn't in the neighborhood, I'd be traveling to go to the Wren. So I encourage everyone to do so. So thanks very much, Chrissy. I actually wanted to ask you, since I respect your cocktails and your hospitality and the bar so much, what are some of your favorite places to go and drink right now in the city?
My new favorite beer bar is called Proletariat. That's on St. Mark's between First and A, and they have great one-off beers. It's like they get one keg of something, and you go in one day, you go in the next day, it's not there. You never know what you're going to get. Half the time, they're sour beers. They're from a company that I know, but I've never heard of that beer. So I like that. I like going there. I also, if I go for cocktails, Death & Company is probably where I would still go to. I've never had a cocktail that wasn't balanced there. I might have a cocktail that I am trying because I've never heard of something in it, and it might not be my thing, but they're always perfectly balanced and delicious and wonderful. So I don't get out much right now to drink so much. But you'll also see me at the bar at Gramsci Tavern quite often because I go back there because it's such a great place, and I you'll see me there. And I do also frequent Bua, which I still go back there because it makes me feel taken care of.
Which is where it started. You have an affinity to St. Mark's between First and A.
I also like PDT, which is right across the street.
It's right there, yeah.
So... I think there's maybe my first apartment was across the park on the other side there in the East Village. So maybe it's kind of my stomping ground, but yeah, I have affinity for that street.
Wow. I actually used to live on 110 St. Mark's right above the Crooked Tree. So it's right over there. Yeah. But anyway, so you opened up the Wren, which, did I mention I love the Wren? It's great. Not just for drinking. There are all sorts of tasty bites there. I love the shrimp. I think it's really delicious. So what were some of the challenges that went with opening up your first bar?
I think transitioning from being, to do a sports reference here, from being a captain or actual teammate to a coach, kind of taking yourself out of the game and having to, even though I do work next to my other bartenders, I'm behind, you know, the bar on Friday nights getting my butt kicked with them, just like everybody else, but I'm still an owner. So I had to realize that I had to act differently and I had to have a different sort of way that I thought about things. And so that was pretty, really hard. Also leaving Gramercy was really, really hard. Leaving this very lovely, warm, cozy nest to going out on your own and finding new partners and learning about them and learning how you're going to operate with them. It can be a struggle. It's also great. It makes you grow as a person and realize that you need to go out and do things that make you uncomfortable sometimes.
And what were some of the things that you're able to do now that you have your place that you weren't necessarily able to do before when you were working for someone else?
I can order any alcohol I want. I mean, if there's something that I'm interested in, I'll order it. If there's a cocktail I want to put on that I like, I just put it on. I can get any beers that I want and within reason. And the buck stops with me with that stuff, which is great. I mean, I have made some off choices once in a while, like that bottle of, you know, something that a rep asked me to carry for him that's going to be on my back bar for the next 20 years, you know, those mistakes. But I think that being able just to decide and do something is fun.
So tell us about some of the new products that you're particularly interested in.
There are a couple products from Haas Elpez, which is a distributor, that I think are really unusual and unique. They have a great line of herbal liqueurs and fruit liqueurs, and of course also gins and other things. But as a producer, I think they've got great products that almost every single one of my cocktails has one of their products in it. There's another great product right now that I really like that I have to figure out how to use because it's really unique. It's from Combière, which is the oldest triple sec producer in the world. Nobody knows that. They think it's Cointreau, but Cointreau actually came out 30 years after them. And they make cool, cool stuff. They have an Avez, which is actually made from gentian, which is a really hard thing to mix as well. Gentian's like a bittering agent, and it has this really kind of like woody, weird flavor. but it's really unique and unusual. And the other one that they have right now is called Kummel. It's a K-U-M-M-E-L. And it's actually a cumin and caraway liqueur. So you smell it and it's super savory. It smells just like food. Like it smells like cumin. And then you put it in a drink and it's a little sweet and you get that cumin, but it's like this cool, savory quality to it. And I'm trying to figure out how to put that in a cocktail because it does kind of throw you off in the first nose. But I like those products that make me like, how do I make this into a cocktail?
Yeah, I find that anytime I taste with House Alpens, they introduce me to something new and I'm like, I got to figure out some way to use this. I just don't know. I don't know how. One of my favorite products from them that you're seeing all around town is the Cookie Americano,
yep,
which I think is so delicious.
It's so amazing. Just on the rocks, yeah, in a cocktail. Yeah, it's great.
I think that has some of that gentian root in it, doesn't it? Yeah.
In quinine. And yeah.
God, that stuff's delicious. Okay, so if you were going to a bar with friends and say, you know, your friend suggested this place and you don't want to be high maintenance, so you just agree to go there and you get there and you're like, wow, they are not trying to make it all nice here.
Yeah.
What would you order at that kind of bar?
To be honest, it'd probably be a bottle of beer or a can of beer. Yeah. Though that's the safest. Okay, so if that's off the table, I would probably do a gin on the rocks, something that's super simple, that you can't really mess up.
Right.
You know?
Right. And how about if you can't tell at first, if it's not blatantly obvious, if this is a bar that's doing good things or not? Because sometimes I've been surprised that, you know, some place looks like a dive bar and then you start looking like, oh, they care. Oh, I didn't realize that. What are some of the cues that would tip you off to saying that this place cares and is trying to do something good?
Actually, funny you ask, because yesterday I was in Greenpoint with my sister, and we walk into this bar, and it's from all other purposes, it looks like a sort of a dive bar. And I sit down, and I notice that the bartender is using a jigger, which first is always like, oh, they have jiggers here. They care what they, you know, mix together. And next thing I know, she has green chartreuse, maraschino, and I'm like, she's making a last word. This is awesome. I'm in Greenpoint at this bar that I thought was just going to be like, oh, order like a, you know, a Modelo in a can bar. She's making a last word. I was like, all right, good. I ordered a cocktail instantly. The back bar is huge. If you see, multiple vermouths, you mentioned that. But, you know, if there's Antica Formula, that's always a good sign. If Campari is out prominently, great. If they have options for lots of gins, those are kind of things to me that tells me that either bartenders go there or the people behind the bar really care about it.
Yeah. So gin's having a moment right now, huh?
Oh yeah.
Especially in Brooklyn, there were no distillers a few years ago, and now there's like multiple Brooklyn gins alone.
Totally.
What are some of your favorite gins, and how do you best like to use gin?
I think gin is the reason it's so popular right now is that it is so different. In the breadth of gin, you've got these really junipery, harsh, you know, intense gins. And then on the other side, you've got these aromatic, lovely, beautiful, soft, you know, feminine ones as well. And I think that means you can pour them on the rocks with a twist, great. Or you can make these beautiful balanced cocktails, or you can have a great gin and tonic with something that's super junipery. I think gin's awesome. But what do I like to do with gin?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much anything. I think Negroni is probably the best cocktail in the world. And the reason I think that is because it is hard to take a sweet without a citrus or some other acid and balance it. But the bitter of the Campari allows it to be balanced. I think maybe this is a thing that I got from Jim Meehan, was like, he never wanted to put citrus in cocktails, but he wanted to get them balanced. And it was like this thing, like he wanted to have a balanced cocktail without a citrus, because I understand sometimes you add a citrus into a cocktail and it kills all the beauty of all the nuance other flavors in there. So Negronis are great. You know, they're balanced. You want to keep drinking them, even though there's Campari sweet, it's still bitter. And you've got all these other things. I think that, I don't know. I'm sure you like Negronis too. So
I love Negronis.
Wax poetic on Negronis.
No. This is the appropriate place to be waxing poetic about Negronis. So how would you make your ideal Negroni? Do you like it on the rocks? Do you like Carpano? I know some people like a Carpano Antica Formula Punta Mes mix of vermouths. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your ideal Negroni?
I would have to say Plymouth was my go-to for a long time. But I also like Brooklyn gin, spelled like Brooklyn's actually spelled, the blue bottle one. It's really citrusy and it's got a lot of, it's citrus heavy, and I think it's kind of a nice aspect in there. So I've been using that as well. I was a huge Carpano Antica fan for a while, and now I've actually gone towards Dolan, because Dolan, I think, is a little less of that orange candied quality. And I want a really like bright, refreshing Negroni. And I usually just do straight Campari. I haven't been putting another bittering sort of thing in there.
And straight up or on the rocks?
Rocks.
Rocks. I always like it on the rocks too.
Always.
Yeah. So it's intense when it's straight up. It's totally intense. If you've been to, have you had our roasted orange?
Yes.
Negroni Spagliato. That's actually my ideal. Because what we do is we take orange wedges, marinate them overnight in punta mes, and then char them on the plancha. And then we'll muddle that into the Campari, and then make a Spagliato, which is a Negroni, but instead of the gin, it has sparkling wine. So it's just a lighter, more refreshing Negroni, something that's not quite as heavy. I know Negronis in the scheme of Italian cocktails are considered aperitif drinks, but they are so strong that I like to have them at the end of the night.
True.
And I like the Spagliato or something that's a little bit lighter at the beginning. So I want to talk about a couple of tips that you might have for our listeners. If someone was going to start making cocktails at home, what are some great tips that you can give them?
My general rule is when you're building a cocktail, my general rule is 2-1-1. And that means two parts of alcohol, one part of a sweetening agent, and one part of a citrus or acid. And so for me, that's a general, obviously. But say, for example, you love margaritas and you want to go home and make an interesting margarita, and you're walking through Union Square and you see that they have strawberries and basil, and you see them and you like them, so they look great. Take them home. You can make a simple syrup. You basically can anything on that rift of two parts, like take your tequila, maybe muddle some strawberries, make a quick simple syrup, which is just equal parts of sugar and water, and you know, put the basil in it when it's warm and let it sit for 20 minutes and strain it out. Now you're making something that was just a margarita, but now it's got all these cool other flavors in it, and it's interesting and unique. And so if you like something, look it up. Look up the recipe, and you can modify it in any number of ways. Will you maybe once make one that's terrible? Yeah, we all do. I put up cocktails sometimes that I taste, and I'm like, what was I thinking? You know, but then maybe I get inspiration about some other aspect of it. So I think don't be afraid to try to mix things. You know, look at a recipe, and then it's just like cooking. If you love a certain type of, you know, pasta, and you change one thing in it, next thing you know, it's slightly different. So my principles are basically 2-1-1, taste, make sure it's balanced, but then have fun.
And have fun. And then the great thing is, you know, if you're making a pasta and you mess it up, that's another half hour, an hour. But if you make a cocktail, probably only took you a minute to put it together. Probably. So you can adjust and keep playing around and trying again. Well, Chrissy Harris, thank you so much. Thank you so much for getting up so early. I'm sure you were working really, really late last night, because Chrissy is a working bartender slash owner of The Wren. And I really encourage everyone to go check it out. You will probably see me there. Thanks again, Chrissy. And thanks to all of you for listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Drink is by Renee Lopez. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.